Exodus chapter 15. Then Moses and all of the children of Israel sang this song to the Lord and spoke, saying, I will sing to the Lord, for he has triumphed gloriously. The horse and its rider he has thrown into the sea. The Lord is my strength and my song, and he has become my salvation. He is my God, and I will praise him. My father's God, and I will exalt him. The Lord is a man of war. The Lord is his name. Pharaoh's chariots and his army he has cast into the sea. His chosen captains also are drowned in the Red Sea. The depths have covered them. They sank to the bottom like a stone. Your right hand, O Lord, has become glorious in power. Your right hand, O Lord, has dashed the enemy in pieces. And in greatness of your excellence, you have overthrown those who rose against you. You sent forth your wrath. It consumed them like stubble. And with the blast of your nostrils, the waters were gathered together. The flood stood upright like a heap. The depths congealed in the heart of the sea. The enemy said, I will pursue. I will overtake. I will divide the spoil. My desire shall be satisfied on them. I will draw my sword. My hand shall destroy them. You blew with your wind. The sea covered them. They sank like lead in the mighty waters. Who is like you, O Lord, among the gods? Who is like you, glorious in holiness, fearful in praises, doing wonders? You stretched out your right hand, the earth swallowed them, and in your mercy have led forth the people whom you have redeemed. You have guided them in your strength, in your holy habitation. The people will hear and be afraid. Sorrow will take hold of the inhabitants of Philistia. Then the chiefs of Edom will be dismayed. The mighty men of Moab, trembling, will take hold of them. All the inhabitants of Canaan will melt away. Fear and dread will fall on them by the greatness of your arm. They will be as still as a stone till your people pass over, O Lord. Till the people pass over whom you have purchased. You will bring them in and plant them in the mountain of your inheritance, in the place, O Lord, in which you have made for your own dwelling, the sanctuary, O Lord, which your hands have established. The Lord shall reign forever and ever. We started last week a new series. We're looking at the topic of worship, and we didn't get all that far. We set forth a number of questions that we're going to want to answer in the study, and then we started trying to form up a bit of a definition of what worship is, and we didn't necessarily settle on one thing. We looked at a number of different definitions, but what was one of the main words that we saw that kept coming up in each of those definitions? Okay, worth. Worship is worth-ship. There was another one. Started with an H. Sounds like an O. Homage. Okay, homage. Can anybody remember what homage meant? To pay tribute, to give what is due. And it came from what idea? That we don't have too much of a connection with these days. Yep, the feudal system, the vassal, the lord and his underlings, and they would have to pay their respects to the Lord and bring their taxes to him and give him the things which he was deserving of because he provided for them and gave them protection and so forth. And so they were giving to him what he was worthy of. So tonight, we want to look at the aspect of wonder. Worship's relationship to wonder. Just as I think about worship, it amazes me. Well, I like to read and watch a lot of science fiction stuff. And it just amazes me how often they put worship into those stories. They're always worshiping something, oftentimes the stars or some creature or something. Why is it that this comes up so often in these literatures? Sometimes the TV shows. Okay, God has written it in our hearts. There's a natural aspect to it. But as I thought about that observation a little bit further, there was something else that was also going on. It's almost always placed in the idea of inferior beings worshipped. Those that come in that are the superior beings, they are superior because they have come to enlightenment and they don't need worship anymore. They know that the silly worship service ceremonies things really don't mean anything. It's just superstition. There's some scientific explanation behind it or something. And so they're also demeaning worship. They're trying to remove the idea of worship. They're wanting to say we've evolved beyond the need of worship. Worship is something that the Neanderthals did. But it is so important to us as believers. We believe that there is a God and that He is worthy of our worship, and it is not something that's relegated to weak minds. This is something that is important, and wonder is a part of this. I'll give you a bit of a dictionary definition of wonder: a cause of astonishment or admiration, to marvel, the quality of exciting amazement or admiration, rapt attention or astonishment at something awesomely mysterious or new to one's experience. The word awe kind of falls in line with the word wonder. It's an emotion variously combining dread and veneration and wonder that is inspired by authority or by sacred, by the sacred or the sublime. So you get a little bit of a different flavor in that second word. It adds a little bit more of the aspect of fear. It strikes a certain uneasiness in us as well as marvel. Not just this astonishment that we don't know maybe what to think or are surprised. What kind of things would we think of as producing wonder? Sunsets, okay. The stars. Oceans. Okay. Miracles. I think of a good magician. You know, and that's not the spiritual, we kind of step away from that for just a second, but to get that sense of what is awe, what is wonder. And they do something right in front of you. You watch them do it, and you're like, how did he do that? That's impossible. You can't have done that. I was watching his hands. How did he do this? That's the idea of wonder, that there's an amazement. There's a mystery that's involved in that. There's some of our biblical words here in the Hebrew. The main word is pala. I don't know if I'm pronounced that right or not. It means to separate by distinguishing action, to be beyond one's power, surpassing, extraordinary, or marvelous. So this is something has happened that distinguishes it from everything else. It sets itself apart by some action or attribute. In the Greek, we have a couple of different terms. The one meaning a prodigy or a miracle. There's a Hebrew word also that the main aspect of it was signs or miracles. See a lot of that back in the Exodus when God was working his wonders. Those were signs. Thuma is a wonderful thing, a marvel, to wonder with great wonder exceedingly. So it carries this above and beyond kind of thing. It's not just something that's intriguing. It just blows our mind. It's exceeding wonder. And then diapero, to be greatly perplexed, to be entirely at a loss. I don't get it. How does this happen? How does this work? And there's many things that we don't fully comprehend. We can read the scripture with understanding by the Spirit of God, and yet it's so rich and full, and God is so big, and his works are so marvelous, we can't fully grasp everything. It's a perplexing to us to understand why, how. To be surprised or to wonder is to begin to understand. And I don't know this man, Jose Ortega Gasset. I think that he probably is not religious. But I liked the thought that is presented here. If you have absolutely no understanding of something, it may not even come to your mind that it is wonderful. You can look at the stars and, yeah, it's really neat. Sun goes down, the stars come out. Sun comes up, the stars go away. But when you have an understanding or a curiosity, you begin to realize things like, you know, those stars are really a long ways away. Those stars are really big. And you start, in your curiosity, you begin to look and to study and you begin to wonder more. It doesn't necessarily eliminate your wonder. It's the beginning of something. Albert Einstein, he says, the fairest thing we can experience is the mysterious. He who knows it not can no longer wonder, no longer feel amazed, is as good as dead, a snuffed out candle. If you don't have the mysterious and you can't wonder, there's a certain part of our being that just is kind of dead. And he recognized the importance of that in terms of the creative ability to be able to invent things. Warren Wiersbe says, there is a paradox of Christian worship. We seek to see the invisible, know the unknowable, comprehend the incomprehensible, and experience the eternal. Like David, we thirst after God, and we are both satisfied and dissatisfied. Like Moses, we cry out for his glory, all the while knowing that our mortal eyes could never behold God's glory in its fullness. Like Peter, we wrestle with a tension within. We want to follow him, and yet we cry out, depart from me, for I am a sinful man. So we see there's a certain aspect of wonder that puts it beyond our comfortable position. We're not comfortable with God at this level. We want to know him, and yet we know that there's so much there that we can't fully comprehend it. There is mystery in worship. This morning we emphasized the fact that you need to know God if you're going to respond to the circumstances of life well. Naomi did not keep a balanced view of God. But ultimately, we're not going to know all about God. And we don't have to wait until we have a full picture to begin to worship. Worship contains an aspect of mystery. We don't know everything about God. We don't know how He does His work. We don't know how He produces salvation. We don't know how He created the universe. You know, there's many, many things we just don't have an understanding. We don't know what the glory of God really is. We couldn't even see it with our human eyes. We are in danger of losing this aspect of wonder. And if we don't have wonder, we're going to lose an aspect of worship. And it's a big aspect of worship. Why would the church in this age have a problem with wonder? Why would we be losing our wonder? Right. Good answer. We live in a day and age when we are studying. Science has become God. It seeks to define everything. If there's something that surprises people, they study it and try to figure out why and how, and there's a natural explanation for everything. What else? Too busy. Oh. I didn't think about that one. Because wonder kind of takes an aspect of meditation, doesn't it? You have to really stop to appreciate things. You know, a child may go out into the yard and watch an ant for 20 minutes. They might sit there and watch a flower bob in the flower garden. They have a great curiosity over some of the things in nature. And we as adults, we just walk right past it. The bug hits our windshield, we hit the windshield wipers and get rid of it. You know, we don't stop to appreciate it. That's good. I like that. Yeah. And that was another, that touches on another aspect that I was thinking of, is we live in an information age. And everything's at our fingertips. And this is an age of discovery. We put cameras everywhere. We watch everything. If we want to know something about the habits of a fish, we stick a camera on it. We want to watch a volcano explode, we stick a camera on it. We watch things from space. Everything's seen. It's like as if there's nothing that can't be seen. And so we live in this information age where information is very easy. Okay. We get used to it. We become, our senses are dulled toward it. And there's different things that do that. Just in normal life, we grow older. And I'm going to point this out in a second. But another aspect of that is entertainment. We live in an entertainment age where we have seen so much. You know, I said I like sci-fi stuff. And you can watch shows where the world blows up and it gets put back together. You know, you snap your fingers and half the world population disappears. You snap them again, they're all back. We have all these effects that we're able to accomplish, destruction and tornadoes and all of these crazy things, and we see it all the time in our entertainment. So we can become kind of dull to these things. So the age of science, the age of entertainment, the age of information. We're in the age of humanistic arrogance. Man has the answers. We know it all. Or if we don't know it all, we can figure it out. We've been to the moon and back. You know, we've solved the cancer problem. Well, not really, but we like to say that we solve cancer. Now, there's all kinds of these kind of things that rather than admitting the things that we don't know and can't know, we boast in our arrogance that we know so much more than our ancestors knew. And it's true. We have so much more available to us. But there is so much that we don't know. And sometimes we slap a definition on something and are content to believe that we understand it. What is gravity? How does it work? I don't know. But I'm content to know that gravity is that force that brings everything to the ground. And I'll ignore the fact that I don't know how it happens, but that I know that it does. Enough that I can use it in mathematical equations and so forth. We're in an age of diminished imagination. Warren Wiersbe had this in his book. He says, "Child's creativity, which includes imagination and wonder, diminishes by 90% between the ages of 5 and 7. Isn't that another reason why Jesus Christ points us to the children? Their worship, their sense of awe, their marvel. They don't claim to know it all. When an adult gets to be 40, he has about 2% of the creativity he had when he was 5 years old. And yet, what a marvel, even that. That 2% by the time that you're 40, how many things have adults imagined and invented? Kids didn't come up with the microwave. And any number of other things that we can look at are a great advancement in technology. Just think what wonder and amazement if we would take one of our country's forefathers and bring him to today. And you say, he looks up, he says, "What's that in the sky?" "Oh, that's an airplane." "A what? What's an airplane?" "Oh, it's like an aluminum tube with wings on it that flies through the..." "What's it for?" "Oh, well, hundreds of people get in this thing and they fly from one coast to the other in just a matter of hours." "What? Man can fly?" And you could look at all kinds of different things that have come about in technology over time, and we're just accustomed to these things, so we don't even marvel at them anymore. If wonder is an important aspect of our worship, we ought to be guarding that and enhancing it as much as we can. We need to take the time to develop it. Nehemiah chapter 9 and verse 17. Somebody can read that when they have it. What is the danger if we do not enhance our wonder and our worship? Okay. Satisfied with something other than God. The description here is that we become stiff-necked and rebellious. They were not mindful of God's wonders. They were no longer amazed. They didn't consider God worthy. The Bible doesn't give us very many definitions, but it gives us a lot of examples. What are some examples of worship? And I don't want you looking at those up there. Or if you can guess what the situations were. What are some examples of worship where wonder is a major aspect of it? Okay. In a lot of the Psalms, you could see this aspect of wonder. Okay. Good. He was amazed at that. Yeah. After God's deliverances, and we read that in Exodus 15, and there again in Judges, that they're just awed by the miraculous intervention of God in their lives. And it led them not only in the having seen with their eyes this wonderful experience, but it pushed them on to contemplate how great God was, how magnificent, how big that He really was. Okay. Yes. I put down 2 Corinthians 6. That would be the dedication of the temple. And then Nehemiah 9, and we'll come back to that one later. But again, the reinstitution of worship with the Israelites as they came back from Babylon. Wonder involves mystery, things that we cannot explain or fully understand. Look at these verses. Judges 13 and verse 8. Yep, I think it's 18. No, 13, 18.
The angel of the Lord said to him, "Why do you ask my name?"
Okay, and he's concerned when the whole situation gets done. He's like, "We have seen God. We're going to die." And his wife calms him down. He says, "He would have killed us outright if he wanted to." Right? "Why do you ask my name? My name is wonderful. There is so much in my name that you cannot comprehend. There is mystery in who God is." Job chapter 9, verses 1 through 13. Okay, this is a meditation of Job. It's one of the base reasonings of why Job worshiped God. He's recognizing there is so much about God that we cannot comprehend. We don't understand. We don't know the answers to why. We don't know how. We just know that He is, and He is majestic and great. He does things He doesn't, we don't have to know anything about it. He doesn't ask us about any of this. Job chapter 36. This is before God starts to speak to him. Elihu, the youngest of the friends, proclaims God's majesty. Starting with verse 24. Okay, and I'm not going to have you read the whole thing there, but he goes on and he brings out illustration after illustration from nature, especially the thunderstorm. And then looking at verse 14 of 37. Okay, stand and consider. We talked about that already a little bit. It takes some time. It takes some thought process, effort. Consider the wonders, wondrous works of God. And then verses 23 and 24. Okay. Romans chapter 11, verses 36 or 33 through 36. So wonder involves the things that we don't understand, but it's more than that. It involves the appreciation of things unique. Deuteronomy 4:34. Okay, this has never happened before. This is unique that God would do this. Deuteronomy chapter 10 and verse 21. Wonder can be exhilarating or humbly reflective. We oftentimes think of the aspect of worship and amazement as something that is exhilarating. Psalm 105, verses 1 through 5. Sing, speak of it, celebrate. This is all kinds of words of celebration there, and we see other times they bring in musical instruments and all of this very boisterous, joyful expression of the wonder of God. Speak of His wonders. But then there's other times when it's not that. 2 Samuel chapter 7 and verse 18. What's David doing there? It's not so much that he's humbling himself, he's been humbled. It's just by the marvel, the wonder of what God just did, he's made very small. And he's not, you know, singing and dancing and praising God at this point. He is very quiet and reflective. And he's really put himself in his position. Who am I that you should do this? And this blows me away. I can't understand. I've done nothing to deserve this. Job chapter 9 and verse 14 and 15. So we see in the topic of worship, it's not only the joyful expression, there's also the time of quiet reflection. It's an aspect of humility. And both are worship. Wonder can be produced through personal encounters with God. Daniel chapter 4, we see Nebuchadnezzar after his humbling, recognizing that it was God and that he was above all gods. Matthew chapter 5 and verse 31. That is not right. Go with the next one. I'll see if I can catch this one.
And he got in the boat with them, and the wind stopped, and they were utterly astonished.
There we go. Matthew 15:31. Okay. In each of these situations, they have come into a close experience with God and His power. Whether it was the healing miracles or the calming of the sea, many different times in Jesus' time on earth, people marveled. And that marvel, that wonder, should lead them to right worship. Sometimes it doesn't. Wonder is produced by a grandeur or magnificence of scope. Grandeur or magnificence of scope. Nehemiah chapter 9. Well, not going to read the whole thing because it's very long. Skip down to verse 5.
Okay. And the Levites, Joshua, Daniel, which is the name, stand up and bless the Lord your God, the Lord's glorious name, which is exalted above all blessed praise. You alone are the Lord. You say to the heavens of heaven with all their hosts, the earth and everything which is you. You are the chosen. You are the Lord God, who chose Abraham and gave him the name of Abraham. You found his heart.
Okay, that's good enough. As we see there in those first verses, they're looking at the grandeur of God and the heavens, their hosts, everything in it, the seas, just the scope of these things are immense. We still don't know what's all down in the depths of the sea. There's mystery there. There's wonder. And it all points to a great God who is greater than his creation. And he goes on and he rehearses history. And he's looking at the scope, the grandeur of God's work in Israel. That, again, that God should do this and create a nation, call them out of another nation, and they were rebellious, and yet God was so patient with them. He is so forgiving. The immensity of the forgiveness of God over his people's rebellions is just, they can't comprehend it. That God would allow them to be taken into Babylon and then brought back into their land and reestablish worship. All of this is, the scope of it is just immense, and we can't comprehend it. Wonder is produced by a terrifying demonstration of power. Luke 8:25. What is the context of this? Okay, and what is their response? They were afraid and marveled. They said, "Who can this be? He commands even the wind and the water, and they obey him." This was terrifying when they experienced that. And sometimes we have personal experiences that make us vividly aware of how great God is. And it can be a terrifying experience. Wonder produces a humbled heart. And Warren Wiersbe, I think it was, flipped it around. He says, if you want to have wonder and worship, you need to humble your heart. And maybe that is true. And maybe this is one of those things that it works back and forth. You humble yourself, you gain wonder. As you gain wonder, it humbles you. But I would focus on the fact that as we wonder at God, it is a humbling experience. Isaiah chapter 6 and verse 3 through 5. So what we see there is, first he had the experience. He got a vision of God in his throne room. He heard the angels, "Holy, holy, holy." And his immediate response was humility. And I didn't have time to read from A.W. Tauzer, but his emphasis was that once you have the wonder of who God is, there's no longer any joking around about it. There's no longer, the big man upstairs kind of thoughts. You've gotten a glimpse of something that is beyond comprehension. Psalm 8 and verse 4, we'll close with this. I encourage you to consider the aspect of wonder and include those things in your worship, your personal time of worship. We try to include that in our corporate worship. But to stop and reflect on the mystery of God, the things that we can't understand or the things we don't yet understand. And rather than letting those things turn us away, that it would cause us to be cast at his feet and marvel at how great our God is.